He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday morning. It is Thursday, September the 18th. This is Bill Gunderson, and it is the Best Stocks Now show on this post-Fed meeting Thursday. And kind of interesting to see how the markets are reacting to what happened. And, of course, this big news on Intel this morning with the big investment in Intel by NVIDIA. And that, last time I looked, Intel was up 27%. So a big day in news here today. We're going to talk about it all here on the Best Stocks Now show. Right now we have, let's see, the markets have been moving around here this morning quite a bit. I mean, they opened up big to the upside. The interest rates are the surprising thing to me. The 10-year is up to 4.13. Personally, I think Jerome Powell made some unnecessary comments, you know, hawkish comments, I would say. The Dow is down 40 points today, 45,977. The NASDAQ, however, with the Intel news, it's up 218, and the chip stocks having a very good day. The NASDAQ's hitting a new all-time high at 22,477, and the S&P 500 is up 12 points or 20 basis points so far. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I am flying solo again. Barry, you know, we've met with a lot of folks here, good people. There is a buzz in the Silicon Valley that we don't find in Sarasota, that we don't find in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, that we don't quite find in Cleveland. Not that there's not a buzz there, but there's a buzz here in the Silicon Valley. It's not new to me. I mean, I've been here many, many times, especially in my early days in the business, when the NASDAQ was on fire, when the dot-com bubble was happening. And it has been, you know, a little while since I've been back here. But this Santa Clara, San Jose area, this is where it's all happened. I mean, we are right in the nucleus of it. I mean, we're just down the street from AMD. We're just down the freeway a little bit from NVIDIA. Arista Networks is just up from us a little ways here, or maybe a block away or so. And you look at all the names on the buildings, and you go into the restaurants, and there's a buzz. I mean, look, on a Wednesday night, I took my crew to Fleming's, which is, you know, it's a chain steakhouse, and it's an upscale place and all. But you couldn't even get a parking place. I had to slip the guy, the valet, I had to slip him some money to park our car, to find some place to park it. And you walk in there, and it is the noisiest place I've ever heard. There's people at every table with backpacks and PCs, and deals are being made, and wine is being poured, and celebrations are happening, and it is really just something to behold. Not unlike the year 2000. Okay, I hate to bring that up. But, boy, I remember going to the restaurants after the market closed. There was a Schroeder's, a German a beer place that a lot of the traders and whatnot would go, because the market closes at 1 o'clock here on the West Coast. And, you know, the Tadich Grill and Skoma's, and everybody's being wined and dined, and deals are being made. And, you know, it's really... really something. And of course, Tesla headquarters, Tesla's plant just up the freeway a little bit. We drive right by that on our way from the San Francisco airport. You know, it's definitely one of the most exciting places that you can be And you think of all of the technological revolutions that have happened, really beginning with Intel, just a few blocks from where we are, and branching out from there. And, you know, Intel is still relevant today. Why? Well, because you've got Jensen Huang at NVIDIA investing billions of dollars into Intel. So if you own NVIDIA, you're also getting exposure to Intel. So I don't need to buy Intel in my value fund, which I was really pretty close to adding it to the value fund. But through my ownership in NVIDIA, we now have exposure to Intel, which is up 27% today. Okay, well, yesterday the market was pretty quiet until 2:30. And when it was all over, the Dow was up 60 basis points. The NASDAQ was down yesterday. I think it was the NVIDIA China news, which there's kind of an update on that this morning. The Dow was absolutely flat. But, you know, how did the bond market? That's really the telltale sign of how the bond market reacted to Jerome Powell's move. Not Jerome Powell. It was the committee. It was 11-1. The new guy that Trump appointed, he held out for a 50 basis point. He was the only dissenter in the group. Everybody else was for 25 basis points. But the bond market really didn't like what they did. How do I know? Well, because, you know, we were under 4% there for a little bit. We were at 3.99, and we had a massive rally in the bond market. And driving interest rates down, which is good for everybody. It's good for the national debt. It's good for home buyers. It's good for the building industry. It's good for the consumer. But the bond market said, you know what? I don't think you did enough, Jerome, because the bond market finished at 4.07 today or yesterday. And if that's not enough, I look at it today, and the 10-year is up 5 basis points. We're back to 4.12. So you got a quarter point rate cut, but you have half of that is being taken away by the rise in interest rates here today. That tells me a lot, okay? And I thought, you know, I didn't think you'd get more than a 25 basis point cut, but I just thought that a lot of his comments in the press conference, I thought they were over the top. He's just kind of a snarky little guy as far as I'm concerned. I'm not a fan of Jerome Powell. Be glad to see him go. I just think, you know, he's got a lot of pride and he's very stubborn, and that's just the way I see it. Maybe you see it differently. I'm sure if you're a mortgage lender, if you're a real estate agent, you're not very happy with what's happened with this whole interest rate environment. But his main reason for the cut was the balance of risk has shifted with downside to jobs. And that's what he's been saying all along, that it would be the jobs market that would drive our rate cut. And obviously you had the major revision to 2024. 900,000 revision. That's not very good math. That's not very good record keeping. That's embarrassing, in my opinion. You know, the last year of Biden, why were those jobs numbers so inflated? I don't know. You think it out in your own mind. And why have there been all of these downward revisions to the labor markets this year? Now, today we have the unemployment claims coming in, and it's actually quite good. So, you know, we had this trend of layoffs and initial jobless claims rising, but all of a sudden we have a pretty good report today, okay? But Jerome Powell basically using the labor markets, you know, it was just a lot of the comments that he made. You saw the market flail around after his rate cut. The market initially went way up, and then it went way down as he did his comments along the way. So anyways, it is what it is. It's in the books. I think the good news is there's definitely going to be two more rate cuts. There's two more meetings left. You get two more quarter basis point cuts, and he said maybe one in 2026. Well, that's a full point. So we're now in an easing cycle. That's a full point in interest rates. which will take that Fed rate down from 4 down to 3% eventually. That's good news for the markets. But right now, the market's not really happy, especially the bond market, because you're seeing interest rates go up today. Initial jobless claims dropped by 33,000 to 231K. I remember it was 266 last month. That's good news, and that might be another reason why interest rates are up, because maybe with the strong jobs report, if we get several of those, maybe you won't get that rate cut next year in 2026. Okay, when we come back, the big news is a few blocks from where I am right now. This happened, I think, this morning. I don't remember it happening after the market yesterday. But all of a sudden, we've met with many Intel employees while we've been here. They got to be happy right now. Why? We'll talk about that when we come back. That's the top story for me. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. NVIDIA is up 2.8% today, and more importantly, Intel is up 25.3% today, which puts it at $136 billion in market cap once again. Why? What happened? Well, I wasn't expecting this one, but it did happen. NVIDIA and Intel sign a blockbuster deal to co-develop chips. NVIDIA is also to take a $5 billion stake in Intel to co-develop PC and data center chips. Does it seem like this economy is being run by data centers? It does. There's 75 of them here in the Silicon Valley. Then, of course, we go across the country, and that's probably one of the most rapid expansions. It's like Starbucks, you know, in the late 90s, or McDonald's in the 80s. Instead, they're building data centers. NVIDIA shares, I'd said, up pretty nicely here today because you have exposure now to Intel. I don't know what NVIDIA paid. They didn't pay what Intel is trading at today, so through owning NVIDIA, it seems to me like we're getting the benefit of this rise in Intel. The two companies will use NVIDIA's NVLink, bringing NVIDIA's artificial intelligence and accelerated computing strength, and Intel's x86 architecture. I know that doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people out there, but the techies here know exactly what that is. In addition to the deal, NVIDIA said it would invest $5 billion in Intel's common stock. Well, yeah, they paid $23.28 per share is what NVIDIA paid, $23.28 per share. They're already up $8 on that. Because it's $31.30 per share. So like I say, I was getting ready to add Intel to my relative value portfolio, and now I don't need to do it because I have exposure to it through my holding in NVIDIA. Okay, now, NVIDIA. Okay, there's a couple points I'd like to make here. We've met with several people. We've met with a lot of people since we've been here. It's been nonstop for me. I mean, I got up at 4:30 a.m. On Tuesday morning, and I have not stopped since, and having fun every inch of the way, a lot of fun. But having said that, there's one thing I want to address in today's show, and that's having a heavy concentration of your retirement in one stock, which a lot of people here do. I mean, just by nature. You've been getting shares of the company you work for. I've met with people that have a big position in Microsoft. We've met with people that have a big position in Intel, in NVIDIA, definitely NVIDIA. And then even some smaller companies where they got lucky and they're working for a company that went public and they ended up with a boondoggle of shares, right, that are worth several million now. And how do you deal with that? And I'm going to just kind of talk about that a little bit here in a minute. But there is other news on NVIDIA. When I looked at NVIDIA, you know, it's still our largest position. It's in one of those leveling off patterns. When, you know, when I took off on the plane from Charleston and headed west, we ascended, you know, until, I don't know, a couple hundred miles, and then we started leveling off. And that's what I would call the chart of NVIDIA's stock right now. And, you know, the valuation, you can definitely make a pretty good case for this stock having a lot of upside potential still. But the chart, in the meantime, you know, they had a great earnings report, and it really didn't move the needle much on NVIDIA. And in fact, as I looked at the chart yesterday, I said, you know, this is one that could start rolling over. Obviously, when you're flying at 30,000 feet, all of a sudden you hear the plane start to, you know, head down towards the airport, and now it's in a descent. And that can happen from a stock that has leveled off. It can roll over and descend quite a bit. And it was really kind of in danger of that as I looked at the chart. You can look at a one-year chart of NVIDIA and see that very clearly. And, you know, I mean, I have a plan. If it were to break that $164 level, now it's back to $175, but yesterday it was testing that $164, so $165 area. I would probably cut my position a little bit in NVIDIA and lock in a little bit more of profit. And I would say the same thing with somebody who has a big position in one stock. Now, having said that, it depends on the stock you have the one position in. I met with someone 2 or 3 years ago. She went through a divorce. Her husband was a pretty big guy at Microsoft, and her entire divorce settlement was Microsoft stock. And she really didn't need the money, and she said, should I be diversifying? I said, well, you know, I would tell you that you're pretty good. You're already pretty diversified by owning Microsoft stock because they're into a lot of things, right? And my advice to her was, and of course a lot of it, there's taxable consequences too. And my advice to her was, I would just, you know, stay with Microsoft. It's doing fine right now. I'll keep an eye on it for you if I think there comes a time when you need to scale back. Okay, and other stocks are different. You know, we met with somebody else that has a vast majority of their net worth in a smaller stock that is in a much more highly competitive space. And I said, I think over time, you need a guy like me. Now, everything she takes is going to be taxable. Most of these people have very low cost basis. But think of the risk in a smaller stock. I mean, you leave your company and quit work, and you've got $3 or $4 million in one stock. I said you need somebody like me. My advice was, we'll put your stock over here. I won't charge you a fee on the stock that you're moving to us, right? Because it's not. But over time, when I see opportunities, I'm going to peel off some of that. You're going to have to pay the taxes. Use this money to live off of, right? It's a lower tax rate, long-term capital gains, than income tax is. And I'll start diversifying out for you. You don't want to do it all at once, right? And then I also said to the people that have big positions in Microsoft and NVIDIA and more stable stocks, I would say, I said there may come a time, we don't know, in the future when it's time to start diversifying out, because you don't want to have that single stock risk. And I think that there's a lot of people in this Silicon Valley that listen to my show that are in that kind of situation. Apple is another one. We met with Apple employees. They have most of their retirement in Apple stock. I just said, you know, over time, when the time is right, you start diversifying out. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. You know, I would say there's another general feeling that pervades the Silicon Valley right now is a lot of people are sitting on some big gains. And they know, you know, that things have been going well for a long, long time here. You know, I always bring up the subject of risk management. You have to be able to manage that risk and have some kind of plan should the worm start to turn at some point in time. And I think, that's probably where most people have, the most difficulty is recognizing when the worm is turning and when it's time to start locking in some profits. And, you know, I always say it's going to be one jobs report at a time. It's going to be one stock at a time, unless something like World War III happens or something like that. You know, there's just going to be times when it's time to start cutting a little bit in various areas. But we're having a huge day today. We're up 1.3% overall today, with huge gains from Spotify, up 4.9%. Palantir signed a deal with the UK yesterday. It's up 4.3%. ASML, which we picked up in our relative value portfolio, is up 7% today. Marvell Technology, which we picked up in our a relative value portfolio, and we added to that position yesterday, is up 5.1% today. NVIDIA is up doing it's up 2.9% today. Credo Technologies, an AI stock, up 6.9% today. So it's a good day today. It's a good day yesterday. It's been a good year. But there will come a time, there's no question about it, when the worm will turn. And that's why, you know, a guy that is very vigilant in the market, I look at my holdings every single day. That's part of risk management myself, in my opinion, is knowledge of what's going on in the world, what's going on in the economy, and what's going on in the individual stocks. I think that's a big part of risk management, being aware. I'll tell you what risk management is not, being a passive investor and not watching things and being in an index fund. You know, we haven't had a wake-up call since 08 or 09, back in then when we had a 53% sell-off in the S&P 500. And you think about it, when the S&P 500 goes down 53%, the high flyers go down 60 and 70%. So risk management is a very important thing. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we bring to the table, is the risk management that we employ. I'm just going to give you a good example. I mean, look at all the money that is in bond funds out there. Holy cow. We saw one person yesterday that's been a victim of bond funds. He's had more than 50% of his 401k in bond funds, and that has cost him dearly over the last 5 to 10 years because they've averaged 2% a year. That's what it's averaged. He was in a Vanguard total bond fund, and I looked up the long-term performance. It's 2.3% over the last 10 years. Had he been in the S&P 500 instead of the bond fund over the last 10 years, 23%, okay? There's a big difference there of lost opportunity cost. But having said that, look at Silicon Valley Bank that didn't do risk management in an obvious time to not own any bonds whatsoever. In fact, we went inverse the bond market in 2022 when they raised rates 75 basis points four times in a row. That's risk management is getting off the railroad tracks. That's probably your best risk management, and even going as far to put in an inverse fund to profit from a scenario like that. So anyways, look, I take a day at a time. I look at the charts. A lot shows up to me. I know where those valuations are at. That's all a part of risk management and watching the news on the world, on our economy here in the U.S., and more important, earnings, earnings, earnings. If you're in equities, it's all about earnings, earnings, earnings. China is open for dialogue in response to a report of the NVIDIA AI chip ban. They're using that as leverage against the U.S. They're having trade discussions. I don't know how they're going. They were in Madrid, Spain, the last I know. Our trade representatives, China's trade representatives. And, you know, that chip ban by China, that's why NVIDIA stock looked like it was going to roll over yesterday or getting close to it. And then today you have the news on Intel, which turns it around. Jensen Huang's answer to it all is, look, you know what? We'll figure it out. I'll be patient. I think that's a watchword here in the Silicon Valley is patience. We met with another guy he's an M&A guy. He does M&A deals, and patience is very, very important in a lot of ways here in the Silicon Valley, and that's how Jensen Huang looks at this current situation with China. In the meantime, Huawei is unveiling new AI chip roadmap to challenge NVIDIA. Okay, that's another issue that NVIDIA has to worry about. We met with people that have a big concentration of NVIDIA in their portfolio. NVIDIA's risk is competition from other companies, and I think this investment in Intel, I mean, he obviously wanted access to the brain power that's still at Intel to try to stay ahead of the game, to try to stay ahead of Huawei, to try to stay ahead of Alibaba, to try to stay ahead of others that are trying to come up with chips that would match NVIDIA's power. Saudi Arabia inks a mutual deal with nuclear-armed Pakistan. Now, just think about that for a minute. Don't mess with Saudi Arabia. They've got a big brother that's got nuclear weapons. You know, there's part of risk management also, knowing what's going on in the world. The quantum stocks are on fire right now. IonQ signs a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Energy for deployment of quantum technologies in space. All this Jetsons stuff that I used to watch, that was one of my favorite cartoons, the Jetsons. Now we're seeing it. We met with a guy yesterday. What did he do? He monitored satellites for a big defense company and did maintenance on satellites. Space. His expertise was things, satellites in space. IonQ today, IONQ is, wow, it's up another 4.7% to $68.48. And it's kind of leading a lot of the other, the quantum computing stocks higher. And like I say now, that belongs down in that emerging growth area of the market. You know, this is where you want to have a little bit of exposure, not a lot. But I find a lot of very interesting companies. Rigetti, in collaboration with QFOX, awarded a $5.8 million contract. So, you know, there's sales now starting to happen at these quantum stocks. Rigetti's one of the charts of the day today. It's up 10%. The quantum stock's having a very, very good day. But like I say, That's down in that little area of the market. And, you know, we have portfolios that we combine all three different strategies. And as we go, we end up with 30 or 35 stocks from the three different strategies. And maybe only a few will be emerging growth. Maybe the vast majority will be, you know, the larger cap growth stocks. But it kind of comes naturally as I buy stocks. You kind of end up with the portfolio that kind of matches the market at the current time, all right? You may end up not owning any emerging growth stocks if that area of the market starts to roll over. But right now it's a pretty hot area of the market with the quantum, with the smaller nuclear stocks, etc. And I say there's nothing wrong with having some exposure there if you're still in the accumulation phase, but it should be a limited amount of exposure. Let's see, the front slump in freight demand. Okay, well, we measure freight demand. That is an indicator. That continues. Freight demand is slowing down. Is that an indicator that the economy is slowing down? We met with some Apple people yesterday. I think that probably the next big thing that they have is going to be a foldable iPhone. I was sitting behind a guy at church, and I noticed he had this big screen. I said, how does... He has a Samsung iPhone that folds out, and it's a big screen. He says, I absolutely love it. Well, Apple maybe by 2026 will have a foldable iPhone that becomes a big screen. We'll be right back. You got to go. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. One other big subject, you know, going back to this heavy concentration in one stock and when to peel it off. Most people that have a heavy concentration in one stock, it's all taxable. It's not in your IRA. It's not in their 401k. It's taxable, and they're going to have to pay long-term capital gains to the IRS and to Governor Newsom here in California with their long-term capital gains tax, which is about 10%. So you're going to pay about 30% total. You're going to lose 30%. But if the stock starts to peel off and gets cut in half, you're going to be glad that you took your profits along the way. But as you do it slowly over time, and as you work it out of the position to diversify, you know, that's where Barry comes in as the certified financial planner, is the tax consequences. We take that into consideration big time, right? And we had many discussions about that. Okay, now the other subject that I want to bring up is heavy concentration in one area, tech. Where do you think most people... money is invested here in the Silicon Valley? Well, the tech stocks, right? I mean, I look at their portfolios, and some of the portfolios look just like mine. I say, this is one of the better portfolios I've seen. Well, I listened to your show. Okay, I might be biased a little bit, but they're in Best Stocks Now. They're not in big stodgy stock. But I talked to a lot of people and saying, you know what? Best Stocks Now are not just from the tech world. Because, you know, I had some people, we've seen people with big, big technology portfolios, and they say, what would you do differently? I said, I would definitely have exposure. We own a lot of Best Stocks Now that have nothing to do with technology. In a way they do, but I said, Lilly is a perfect example, with the weight loss drug. How important is that discovery? I think that it hasn't really even been realized yet. And I said, you know, having non-tech stocks, you don't have to. The best stocks now do not just come. I think of some of the stocks over the years, Priceline.com. I think of Green Mountain Coffee that came along with the K-Cups. I think of Gilead Sciences that came along with the pill instead of getting a liver transplant. I think of Dexcom coming along with the glucose monitoring that you wear, and Pod Insulet, which shot the medicine, the insulin into your system. retail stocks that have come along over the years, Chipotle, Deckers, Uber is, in a way, a non-tech stock, DoorDash. You know, there's other areas of the market that you can spread out into and not be too heavily concentrated in any one sector. Now, the opposite of what I'm telling you here is to be too diversified, to have exposure to sectors that aren't working at all. For instance, the oil and gas sectors, I don't have any exposure. Just one stock. I don't have any exposure to the oil and gas sector. And you know, the common wisdom in the market, if there is such a thing, is you should have exposure to every sector. No, I don't believe that, you know. And you should have exposure to every asset class. And, you know, as the saying goes, you're 50 years old, you should have 50% of your retirement, your growth fund, in bonds and 50% in stocks. I don't buy that one either. You should have 5% in gold automatically, just because that's the way the asset allocation strategy works. I don't buy that either. I think you have to be much more tactical in that. You know, the healthcare sector is terrible right now. With United Healthcare and Humana, you know, I pulled the plug on Oscar Health and others just because it's such a sour sector right now. So you do have to have, in my opinion, concentration in the best asset classes now, but you also have to be flexible to change that asset class mix, not on your age, but based on the world and what's happening in the world and what's happening in the economy, okay? And the same way with the sectors in the stock market. You know, there's times, I remember times, I saw Nucor report earnings today. That's a terrible sector in the market. Basic materials, steel, aluminum, copper, not a great area to be invested in. But I remember in 2006, I want to say, 2007, those were the momentum stocks, crazy. I remember U.S. Steel, X, symbol X, hitting new all-time highs. I remember Cleveland Cliffs. I remember Nucor. I remember some of the aluminum stocks and the copper stocks because China was sucking up basic raw materials to build cities, skyscrapers, cranes everywhere in China, and they needed all of those raw materials, cement stocks, rebar. There's a time for everything, and that's why, you know, my Best Stocks Now app is a relative. It grades on a relative basis. It looks at all of the market, and it tells you where the strength in the market is. And yes, right now it's heavily focused and concentrated in the tech sector, obviously. That's where the action is at. But it's not always that way. I met a guy yesterday that worked for JDS Uniphase. I remember when JDS Uniphase was the hottest stock in the market. That was the year 2000. He said it got, I remember it going to 300. He said, no, it went a lot higher than that. And I said, didn't it end up going under a dollar? He said, yes. It ended up going under a dollar. And it did survive. Today it's Lumentum, L-I-T-E, which has done pretty well, actually, and another stock. But you can see tremendous crashes. I saw an 80% crash in the NASDAQ. I'm glad I have that experience in my memory bank and was there to witness it. I think I would handle it a whole lot differently today than I would did and would have 20 years ago. So anyways, I just want to throw all of this out. A lot of this is just, you know, something to think about and worry about. Right now, the going is good. The Fleming's is jam-packed, crowded. The buzz is happening. But boy, I remember this place in 2001 and 2002. Many of the funds and hedge fund managers that I visited, empty offices, right? Not too long after that. And then, of course, COVID took its bite, big time bite, out of the downtown San Francisco area. All right, well, we're out of time. If you'd like to talk to us, if you've got a heavy concentration in certain sectors, heavy few stocks, and you have a hard time knowing when it's time to start peeling off and diversifying and putting in a risk management program, I do that on a daily basis. Give us a call at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST, to get a sample of the newsletter for 4 weeks, the trial, GundersonCapital.com, GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.